The House will come to order. Good morning, colleagues. The flag salute this morning will be led by Representative Kevin Cameron.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning once again, colleagues. The opening ceremony this morning will be presented by Marilyn Keller of Portland. She is a guest of Representative Frederick, and she is performing a number in observance of Black History Month. Good morning and welcome.
Would you please rise for the singing of the Black National Anthem? Lift every voice and sing, till earth and heaven ring, ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing a rising sun of a new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. Stony the road we trod, bitter the chastening rod, felt in the days when hope unborn had died, yet with a steady beat have not our weary feet come to the place for which our Father sighed. We have come over a way that with tears has been watered. We have come treading our path through the blood of the slaughtered. Out from the gloomy past till now we stand at last where the white gleam of our bright star is cast. God of our weary years, God of our silent tears, thou who hast brought us thus far on our way, thou who hast brought thy might, led us into the light. Keep us forever in the path, we pray, lest our feet stray from the places, our God, where we met thee, lest our hearts, drunk with the wine of the world, we forget thee. Shadowed beneath thy hand, may we forever stand true to our God, true to our name. native land.
Thank you very much, Marilyn. Courtesies, Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank you all for being here. Marilyn Keller is not just for me a singer, and she is a fabulous singer, as you just heard. She's also a friend, a neighbor, and I've known her since she was in middle school. she has done extremely well, and I want to appreciate her being here. So thank you very much again, Marilyn, for being here and to sing this song. The song itself is something that I wanted to bring out to you. You have these orange-colored cards. The lyrics are on the song. You should put that in your pocket and carry it with you in case you find yourself this month at African American History Month, so that you'll have those lyrics available to you. And there's information about the song itself on the back as well. So thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. And again, thank you, Marilyn, for your presentation. Further courtesies, Representative Hoyle.
Hi, I would like to introduce my constituent, Justin Savada, and he is here from Bethel to learn more about our government, because in 12 years he'll be able to vote, so he wants to make sure that he knows entirely too much about the legislative process. So please welcome him here today.
Thank you, Representative. Further courtesies? Seeing none, colleagues, just coming into the back gallery, you have a group of students from Oregon Trail Elementary. They are out of Clackamas, and friends this morning or guests of Representative Patrick Sheehan. Good morning. Thank you for joining us and coming to visit. Any further courtesies? Verification of a quorum. The clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. Representative Wisnett. Excused. Jensen. Quorum is present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president to inform you that he has signed HCR 201.
First readings, memorials, and resolutions.
HCR 205, in memoriam, Representative Alan B. Pinn, 1936 to 2011.
Measure read first time is passed to the co-speakers' desks for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. Representative Kotek.
Mr. Speaker, I move that in compliance with Article 4, Section 19 of the Oregon Constitution, and notwithstanding any provision of the rules of the House of Representatives of the 76th Legislative Assembly, the requirement that on its final passage each bill shall be read section by section, be suspended this regular session of the 76th Legislative Assembly, and that all bills pending before the House for final passage during this regular session be read by title only.
Representative Kotek moves that in compliance with Section 19 of the Oregon Constitution and notwithstanding any provision of the rules of the House of Representatives of the 76th Legislative Assembly, the requirement that on its final passage, each bill shall be read by section, be suspended by this regular session of the 76th Legislative Assembly, and that all bills pending before the House for final passage during this regular session be read by title only. Those of the opinion that the requirement that all bills be read by section should be suspended will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion adopted. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 5201 relating to State Financial Administration and declaring an emergency. House Bill 5202 relating to State Financial Administration and declaring an emergency. House Bill 4167 relating to offenses and declaring an emergency. House Bill 4168 relating to courts and declaring an emergency. House Bill 4169 relating to offenses and declaring an emergency.
Bills read first time are passed to the co-speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 4047 relating to alcoholic beverages sales exempted from licensing requirements and declaring an emergency.
Bill read second time is passed to third reading. Third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 4008 relating to medical imaging and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4008. Representative Kenny Geyer.
Mr. Speaker and esteemed colleagues, I am pleased to introduce House Bill 4008 related to medical imaging. This bill modifies requirements for licensure by the Board of Medical Imaging and declares an emergency effective on passage. It was the first bill to be approved by the House Health Care Committee as a do-pass recommendation on a 7-0-1 vote and has minimal fiscal impact. It's a very simple bill designed to correct some oversights from House Bill 2245, which passed in 2009. That bill expanded Oregon's medical imaging laws to require state licensure of MRI technologists, nuclear medicine technologists, and sonographers beginning July 1st, 2010. It also required that all new or renewing medical imaging licensees be nationally credentialed by after January 1st, 2014. However, the Board of Medical Imaging, OBMI, realized that three groups of current licensees have situations that were not fully considered in House Bill 2245. This bill, number one, legalizes provisional licenses for these three groups through July 2011 and allows the board to renew their licenses after 2014. Number two, it allows the board to continue to renew licenses of radiographers who have already passed the national credentialing under state sponsorship. Number three, it allows grandfathered radiographers to continue work after 2014. Some have practiced since the 1970s and were never required to earn a national credential. Now approaching retirement, it makes no sense for them to quit work to go back to school for 2 years to pass the national credentialing exam. This bill would allow the board to continue renewing the radiography licenses of grandfathered licensees after January 1st, 2014. The reason I am so honored to be introducing House Bill 4008 as my very first bill in my career is because it corrects an unjust wrong that was done in 2009. As many of you know, I have stood up for social justice and underrepresented populations all of my adult life, and this bill works to ensure that all medical imaging technologists have a fair shot at licensing. Furthermore, I have always believed in utmost transparency, which is at the heart, so to speak, of what these fine professionals promote. In the spirit of promoting equal opportunity for licensing and supporting those who bring transparency to all aspects of our lives, I urge you to support House Bill 4008. It's a good bill. Should pass.
Thank you very much, Representative. Congratulations. It's wonderful to have you here with us on the floor this morning. I'd urge you to do your homework prior to reading your first bill. It is customary that you would memorize that, not hold and read that. So from this point forward, try to study that really closely. Bring forward that in memory. But we are glad to have you here. Further discussion, Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I yield to the representative.
Thank you. This is a question for the representative from, I'm not, somewhere in Portland, I guess, is where you're from. You sit next to me in committee, and you slid me over a little note that said that we need to have radiation therapy for the members of the Senate to check brain activity. And I don't know what a radiation therapist is. Can you describe that for us, please?
Thank you, Representative. I would be happy to explain that. A radiation therapist is a person other than a licensed practitioner who handles ionizing radiation in the process of applying radiation on a human being for therapeutic purposes under the supervision of a licensed practitioner. I'm sorry for not having memorized that. I believe the representative from Tualatin and West Lynn introduced her first bill in 2009 that also dealt with applications on human beings for therapeutic purposes. If that bill was passed for massage therapists, it's only fair that this bill for radiation therapists gets passed, because I'm all about social justice and equal representation. Thank you.
Follow-up?
Follow-up question? Does the carrier yield?
No, I do not.
Oh, okay. Well, then to the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
For the record, I was not here in 2009, because if I had been, we might have had some different outcomes. So it was in 2011 session last year that I was here carrying that wonderful bill that helps massage therapists all over the state have full employment, and we're certainly all about jobs in this building. But since I supported this bill out of committee, I will stand with this bill, because anything that puts new ions in the brain of the Senate folks over there, and I'm going to support that, and maybe we will get to yes on some jobs bills this year, Mr. Speaker. So I will stand and support the new gal from Portland, and appreciate her being here. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I yield.
She does?
That's correct response. Good representative from Southeast and Northeast Portland, you made reference to the bill being a rather simple bill, so please forgive me for the following question. In Section 6, page 4, line 17, could you please tell me the difference between diagnostic medical sonography, magnetic resonance imaging, and nuclear medicine technology?
Thank you for that question. Sorry that it's not memorized. I try to do my homework. Obviously, in some cases, I've got my years mixed up, but I do know the definitions here. Diagnostic medical sonography means the use of non-ionizing high-frequency sound waves with specialized equipment to direct the sound waves into areas of the human body to generate images for the assessment and diagnosis of various medical conditions. Magnetic resonance imaging means the process by which certain nuclei, when placed in a magnetic field, absorb and release energy in the form of radio waves that are analyzed by a computer, thereby producing an image of human anatomy and physiological information. Nuclear medicine technology means the specialized equipment that measures radiation emitted by radionuclides, including counters and cameras that form medical images for interpretation by a physician or assist in therapeutic use of radionuclides. You can see why this is a really simple bill. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker, I was not paying attention. Was that the answer?
That was the answer.
To the bill?
To the bill.
Good bill should pass. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you very much. Further discussion, Representative Kampf.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I yield.
She does.
Well, Representative, you may not know, but I used to be a teacher, and your last definition was rather complex. I have an easier one, because I used to just teach basic reading and math, not math, just reading and writing. But could you tell me concisely, without using big words, what is medical imaging?
I would be happy to. Thank you for that question. Medical imaging is the use of specialized equipment for the promotion of visual representations of human anatomy, tissues, or organs for the use in clinical diagnosis and treatment, and includes but is not limited to X-ray, single photon emission, positron emission technology, ultrasound, magnetic fields, visible light, and radio waves. These are really kind of simple, I'm sure you agree, simple terminology. You might think this is a fancy way of those of us in favor of sex education in the schools of trying to slip this into the curriculum without anyone knowing, which is what I know teachers and principals like you often try to do. But I would never do that, because I am for 100% transparency. Thank you.
Follow-up, Mr. Speaker.
Follow-up question, does the carrier yield?
I yield.
She does.
Now I'm confused. You use the word sex, body, and anatomy in the same sentence. Are we talking about sex education?
And organs, too. Organs were in there. Well, I am all for sex education in the schools, I must admit. That would be the only way we could really prepare people to go on and have these illustrative careers in medical technology imaging.
They've got to know the basics. They've got to know what they're looking for.
Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
I really have some concerns about that definition, but I know that our children need to learn all facets of life, so I might be a yes.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I yield.
She does.
Thank you. Representative from Southeast and Northeast Portland, my question is going to a much larger problem that I can kind of see transforming here on the floor. And we've heard questions or comments made about the Senate, and I'm concerned about this bill, while in support of it when it first came to the floor, but worrying about brain activity in the Senate, worrying about sex education. I'm wondering if we've developed a lot of controversy over this bill, and I wonder if it shouldn't be referred back to committee, maybe to be gone through a little thorough and maybe somebody else carry it on the floor. What is your opinion on that at this point?
Good bill, should pass.
Thank you, Representative.
Follow-up question.
Follow-up question, does the carrier yield?
I yield.
She does.
Would this device allow us to actually go in and monitor brain activity? This bill here.
This bill will allow us to monitor brain activity, and that's why I thought that it was a very good proposal by the representative from West Lynn and somewhere else to use this technology to kind of see what the images of our Senate colleagues. I think that would be a great purpose not stated in the bill, an unintended but positive consequence of the bill.
And one more follow-up, if I may, Mr. Speaker.
Follow-up question, does the carrier yield?
I yield.
She does.
Is this technology far enough along to monitor the brain activity of the representative from the Bedrock District, since his mind goes a mile an hour in lots of different directions at one time?
Could you? Can I yield to the representative representing the Bedrock District?
I'm sorry, Representative, do you have an answer to that question, or would you like to pass?
I think that 1 mile an hour does not even come close to what the representative from the Bedrock District does.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, with all the controversy that we've exposed on this bill on this House floor, I think we really need to send it back to committee and get it right. So I'm going to urge a no vote on this bill today, and that we examine it much closer, because if it can't keep up with the representative from the Bedrock District, it's not something we should send out of this body. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative, we do have further discussion. Given this morning's activities, please consider that some of your questions may be more pertinent to others than others. However, the next representative has a question about the bill. Further discussion, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was curious if the representative would entertain a serious question.
Question of the carrier, does the carrier yield?
No, I do not. I don't take serious questions.
Do I plead in this situation, Mr. Speaker?
That would be up to you, Representative.
No, Representative, would you please entertain a serious question for me?
No, I will entertain a not serious question.
Mr. Speaker,
yields. Carrier yields.
I will ask the question, and it can be answered or not. I actually have a son that is back in community college as an adult learner. He has gone through all of his prerequisites as required for the imaging program, and he will be hoping to get one of two slots in the imaging program cohort through Columbia Gorge Community College in December. He's midstream in this process. Does this bill change anything that he's going to call me up and say, what the heck? I'm well on my way, and you guys changed the horse in the middle of the stream.
my understanding of the bill, and I'm happy to be supported by the able staff person to the House Healthcare Committee, is that it will not change anything. All of this bill does is deal with current licensees to make sure that they are grandfathered in or that their provisional licenses are legal, and to clarify language in the statutes. So in fact, this should clarify the profession that he's going into. If anything, it's a benefit.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kenny Geyer, do you wish to close?
No, I don't. 1 second here, please. A la the good representative from Central
Representative
Lane.
Representative Kenny Geyer, you do wish to close.
Well, a la the good representative from Central Lane and Linn counties, I have no close, which is why I'm ready for the MRI. I am also ready to vote aye for HB 4008, and I urge my esteemed colleagues to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kenny Geyer, how do you vote? Representative Brewer, how do you vote? Brewer votes aye. Representative Hoyle, how do you vote? Hoyle is off the floor. Representative Widener, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Mr. Speaker, I wish to change my vote from nay to aye on the grounds that I think the Senate is adults and they can handle this bill, even the way it has been delivered.
Thank you, Representative. House Bill 4008, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 4034, relating to prompt progress payments on public improvement contracts and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4034. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 4034 comes to you with unanimous support from your House Business and Labor Committee. It deals with a very pertinent and present problem that exists in the public contracting world in Oregon today. Slow payment to contractors and contractors on construction projects, especially by public owners, is becoming a serious concern for Oregon contractors. With penalties for late payments indexed, the current penalty for late payment is only 0.45% a year. If an owner or subcontractor pays their contractor subcontractors as many as 30 days late on a $1 million invoice, the penalty is only $400. This legislation moves the penalty to a flat 9% annual rate and ends the variable nature associated with the variable rate. It will make penalties meaningful so that people don't make a, quote, business decision to delay payments or to make them in a slow fashion. In committee testimony, we heard that that contractors have found that some of the slowest payments in commercial construction projects are actually on public projects. Government not paying its bills on time and expecting its contractors to do the same is simply inexcusable. House Bill 4034 also improves invoicing and billing on projects. It ensures that if agencies or contractors change their invoicing or billing processes in the middle of a project, that their contractors and vendors are notified 45 days prior to the new process being implemented. In committee, we heard of instances where payments are being delayed because of lack of notification about new billing forms or policies. All this change does is require notice and require that contractors and vendors are provided applicable forms prior to the new process taking place. If we want to increase the availability of capital and small business, House Bill 4034 is one of the best ways that we can do that. This legislation will ensure that money gets to Oregon contractors in a timely way and to ensure that they are able to maintain positive cash flow and the ability to pay vendors and hire workers. And colleagues, I just want you to be aware of the consortium and the collaboration to put this bill together amongst folks representing union shops, non-union shops. This was truly a consensus bill. It's a small thing that we can do to try to make the lives of Oregon businesses better as they still struggle in this recession that we have. We've got to make sure that they can maintain cash flow so that they can pay their subcontractors, that they can pay it on a timely fashion and not create undue bottlenecks within the process. So it's a good bill. It should pass. I encourage your support. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Representative Conger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Just very quickly, I wanted to point out that this is a good bill, among other reasons, because through this law, we will be reinforcing the idea that you should say what you're going to do, and then you should do what you said you would do. And I think we could, there are opportunities to do a better job of backstopping the simple premise that people should be honest in their business contracts. I also want to compliment the various industry groups who worked on this bill during the interim and brought it to us as a finished product that they could all agree on and that really accomplished the goals of the bill without getting too carried away.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Johnson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 4034, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Colleagues, I'm going to take just a moment and return to the order of courtesies, as once again we've been joined by a group of students in the back gallery. This again is a group of students. Give them a big wave. We'll say hello to you. Good morning from Oregon Trail Elementary out of Clackamas, guest this morning of Representative Patrick Sheehan. Welcome. We appreciate you being with us on the floor this morning. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 4043, related to documents issued by the Department of Transportation and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4043. Representative Kinnemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker and colleagues, I want to thank the House Committee on Transportation for moving this bill forward. And I want to talk a little bit about this bill because at first blush, it seems like it may have a few issues. And frankly, I think it does. On the other hand, it serves a very important and specific purpose, one which some of your constituents may have as well. It seems that about 6 months ago, one of my constituents, a 34-year-old lady who lives in Canby, is married and has two young children, called me and she said that she had just arbitrarily been found out her license.
Representative, can I ask you to pause for just a moment, please? Thank you. Colleagues, first day, bill's on the floor, lots going on. Let's give a member carrying a bill the courtesy we would all expect. Keep the noise level down so that we can all be heard. Thank you. Representative, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate that. I received a call from a lady in Canby, one of my constituents, who is 34 years of age, or was 34 years of age, married, two young children, and she had her license suspended in what she thought was a very arbitrary way for 1 year. In checking into it at her request, I found out that the current law reads that with the new, I just lost my word here, with the new imagery system that the DMV uses for licenses, if you have previously held a license and your picture has been on there with a different name, as is sometimes an indiscretion that's for adolescent indiscretion of drinking alcohol or getting admittance to taverns, something that, frankly, a lot of people have done, and I'm grateful it's one of the few indiscretions of adolescence that I did not succumb to, but you get identified, as well as those who commit actual fraud with this identification. And the law requires an arbitrary one-year suspension. As I called DMV, and I wish to thank Amy Joyce for some wonderful work in lots of different ways, she said, well, it's really just automatic. Well, the Olivers ended up hiring an attorney, spending about $1,400, and eventually got this one-year suspension changed to a hardship permit. But it's a hardship permit that's predicated upon the assumption that the person is an alcoholic. So as a result, now, and here is a lady who was working part-time as a realtor, and her other job also involved driving. She's limited to driving only for business purposes 5 days a week, cannot drive on the weekends, and is not allowed to drive with her children present in the car. I'm sorry, what she did was wrong, but that kind of penalty is excessive. So we tried to figure out how we could create an efficient, pretty simple, straightforward system. And yes, there are larger issues here of due process and some questions about statutes of limitations, but those are not a short session series of questions. But this, we can fix this with what has been suggested by DMV. What they suggest in these instances where someone is caught, and incidentally, about 1,000 people have already come under this, about another 100 a year for the next 6 to 8 years, your constituents will face, yours and mine will face this. I think we need to find a way to moderate it, and what it calls for is the creation of a hearings process. So if you are identified as having had false identification, and if you were under the age of 21 at the time, and it specifies that you are 21 or older, and if your record is good, then you can appeal and have a $75 hearing, and they can make arrangements in for either a work permit or just a dismissal of the suspension. However, I would note that the license suspension would still be on the person's record, but they would be able to go back to being a productive mother and citizen without those arbitrary driving restrictions. I think this gives the opportunity for ODOT to have some needed flexibility in this extenuating circumstance. I think that there are those who engage in occasional adolescent in discrepancies, and I think it's appropriate to have a way to solve this. I urge your support of the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I want to explain my no vote on this in committee. First, I want to recognize that the intent is good, but the implementation of it is poor. What's being called as youthful indiscretions truly is fraudulent underage drinking. And what this bill does is lessen the consequence for fraudulent underage drinking. And when you do that, I think that it will increase fraudulent underage drinking, and that's why I voted no. That's number one. Number two is that there are due process and statute of limitation questions, big questions that need to be addressed, and I think that it's better to address them by an omnibus bill, a larger bill, not this very narrowly tailored bill. So that's why I voted no, and I'll vote no again. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kinnamer, would you like to close?
I'll make this brief. I'm not going to argue with the good representative. I think there are some interesting issues here, but part of what we're here to discuss is the public good. And when you have a current law and you don't have a good way to fix it in this short, expeditious session, but you have a solution that would work. I think it's time to implement that. It will go out of phase, and in fact, in 6 to 8 years, this problem will no longer be there because those license renewals will have proceeded through. But I think, yes, it was fraudulent. I think Mrs. Oliver and anyone's willing to admit they did the wrong thing. I don't think it increases the likelihood people will do it. This is about an indiscretion that's 14 years old in this instance. It's not a current one. I do think the second thing is that we have a rule in law that talks about proportionality in penalties. The penalty should fit the crime. This woman is not an alcoholic, but she is subjected to the same standards as an alcoholic. That's not right. The second is, it makes it an expensive proposition to get justice about an issue that occurred 14 years ago that if we had more time would probably be covered by the statute of limitations. I think it's a simple solution to a very small piece of a much larger issue, and I encourage your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? No. Barnhart votes no. Representative Matthews, how do you vote? Matthews votes aye. Representative Wisnett votes aye. House Bill 4043, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 4117, relating to funeral products and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4117. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 4117 is related to pre-need funeral contracts. This bill allows the Department of Consumer and Business Services to regulate those who administer those pre-need contracts in addition to those who sell or offer contracts. It clarifies that all entities that sell, offer to sell, or administer pre-need contracts must have certified provider authority. It eliminates inactive status for certified providers. It clarifies the process for appointment of a successor for certified providers. It clarifies that a guaranteed contract must be paid, must be full paid before need. It also clarifies the master trustee expenses that may be paid from earnings on the trust funds. It authorizes recalculation of the trust fund balance used for the master trustee fee calculation. It adds description and standards for what could constitute fraud or deceit in the pre-need industry, such as making knowingly untrue statements or filing false reports. Such criteria are standard in most DFCS programs, which is the Department of Finance and Securities. Oregon Funeral and Cemetery Consumer Protection Trust Fund. It authorizes DCBS to use rulemaking to increase the current $5 contract assessment. And that's so that they can make sure that this fund remains solvent, and it also puts a $2 million cap on that trust fund. That trust fund is essentially there to protect consumers and their monies in that trust fund to make sure they're there at the time of need when somebody goes to use them. Oftentimes it's generally about 7 or 8 years, but can go 15, 20 years as well. So this is a good bill, passed unanimously out of the committee, no fiscal, no revenue impact statements. I urge an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Holvey, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Huffman votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Wisnett votes aye. Representative Gelzer votes aye. House Bill 4117, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 4024, relating to Central Background Registry.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 4024. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today I bring you House Bill 4024, which comes from your House Judiciary Committee with a unanimous aye vote. This bill removes the sunset on legislation that allowed Metro to use the Oregon Child Care Division's Central Background Registry to provide screening of prospective child care providers. Metro is the governmental entity responsible for the running of the Oregon Zoo. Over the years, the zoo has developed a wide range of programs to educate and care for children. More than 4,000 children enroll every year in camps, conservation internships, and youth development programs at the zoo. Metro and the zoo must comply with requirements to have employee background checks to provide protection for children participating in these programs. In 2009, legislation allowed Metro and the zoo employees who have a direct unsupervised access to children to enroll in the Central Background Registry, which is a very efficient and reliable system. There is no cost to the state from this arrangement, which is governed by an intergovernmental agreement between Metro and the Child Care Division. It requires Metro to pay the full cost of having access to this system. House Bill 4024 maintains this requirement. By all accounts, this system is working well. Metro, the Zoo, and the Child Care Division are all satisfied that it is time to lift the sunset. This bill received the unanimous support of the Judiciary Committee, and it has no opposition, and I strongly urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Tomei, do you wish to close?
Not at this time.
She does not. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem votes aye. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. And Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Wingard votes aye. House Bill 4024, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final readings, memorials, and resolutions. Clerk shall read the memorial.
HJM 201, urging Congress to pass Chiropractic Care Available to All Veterans Act.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of HJM 201. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'm always humbled every time I come into this building. We put on the little gift store button that says we can make the rules and serve our neighbors. And, you know, of course, we all went through the process to be elected to be here. But frankly, we have the right to be here, not just because our neighbors elected us, but literally the type of government that we have is truly been born on the backs of soldiers. When you think about sending a soldier to the desert and he or she has a 60-pound rucksack on their back and they're traipsing through 140-degree weather in Iraq or Afghanistan, this memorial is really just about urging Congress that we should allow chiropractic care into the treatment of all of our soldiers. We hear a lot about PTSD, and frankly, PTSD is just one of many problems that faces our soldiers and airmen and women who serve in the military. Musculoskeletal injuries are one of the highest causes of soldiers who don't re-up for service because physically they can't do the job any longer. It keeps them out of drill weekends, and it keeps them out of service of our nation and our state. So I'm going to urge that we be a yes on this because, frankly, we have really good, those of us who take the health care benefits from the state of Oregon have very good benefits, and we get chiropractic care. We have TRICARE at home as an insurance, and TRICARE does not cover chiropractic care for our airmen and women and servicemen in uniform. So I'm going to urge that this body just be a yes vote today on urging Congress that we should accept the Chiropractic Care Act, that they go out and carry this torch for us, our federal delegation, and make sure that we've got the care for soldiers that we need. Because quite frankly, the only reason we're in this building is on the backs of a soldier or serviceman. So I'm going to urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Until this motion came
to the memorial?
To the memorial. Thank you. Until this memorial came to the floor today, I was unaware that chiropractic services were not routinely available at the VA. I am astounded that they are not, and that is, I am appalled that they are not. It astounds me that absolutely basic services of the kind that many adults need, let alone those who have the kind of physical activity that our veterans have engaged in, are not available at the VA. I can't believe it. Well, except I know it's true. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this resolution. Many years ago, I was in a rear-ender automobile accident. I was unaware that I was injured. More recently, about 5 years ago, I suffered a serious sciatica problem where I found it almost impossible to walk because of a pinched nerve in my lower back. The kind of injury that many people have, and I'm sure that many soldiers and so forth have as well. And that injury led me to go to a chiropractor for treatment. That chiropractor fixed me up, and she not only helped me deal with my lower back sciatica problem, but she asked me when the injury was involving my upper back, involving the rear-ender automobile accident, because she found a problem there that I didn't even know existed, and dealt with that and improved my situation so that I'm functional now and I can exercise and I can work and I can do the things that would be utterly impossible were I taking muscle relaxants, were I taking pain pills to deal with that old sciatic injury. Colleagues, this bill, this memorial is one that ought to shame the Veterans Administration into fixing this problem. It is astounding. Now, I will say one other thing quickly about this as I urge your aye vote. I do not believe that the typical allopathic physician's training in Oregon includes an understanding of the kinds of issues that chiropractors deal with routinely. When I spoke with my regular physician, a very good physician who was very, very good at her work, after I had had the chiropractic treatment, she asked me why I had not come to see her for muscle relaxants and pain pills. And of course, my response was because I didn't need them. What I needed was to get the pinch in my back straightened out so that it no longer bothered me. And that's exactly what I did. Colleagues, our veterans deserve absolutely no less. It is astounding that the hospital in Portland has not done what it was supposed to do in response to the act of Congress a decade ago, and they need to do it now. I would note that the University of Western States, the Chiropractic School in Portland, has in the past offered to supply the Portland VA Medical Center with supervised fourth-year interns, as well as supply all necessary diagnostic treatment and physiotherapy equipment needed at absolutely no cost to the VA. And the prior directors have done nothing. I urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the memorial.
To the memorial.
Thank you, colleagues. I urge your eye support on the House Joint Memorial 201, and I thank my good colleague, for the representative from Tualatin and West Lynn, for bringing this forward. I think to characterize this as a no-brainer would be fairly simple, but I want to say this. I want to remind this body these are citizen soldiers, many of them serving for not only the first deployment, but second, third, fourth, in some cases, fifth. They're going at the request of our country and our nation, serving in a war that many of us don't even understand. Some of those wars are starting to end now. Here's why this is so critical. Because those wars are ending. That would be the good news. The bad news, media coverage is diminishing. The light is dimming. For those of us around us that are close to the issue of Veterans Affairs, let me tell you something. This will soon be forgotten if we don't keep it in the forefront of discussion. We could use this month as the excuse to do nothing. Let's face it, short month, low expectations. I have very high expectations along with my good colleague and my good friend. I have high expectations because if we don't do something now, it'll be a year till we get to do something again. That's one more year without care for people that are suffering from military sexual trauma, from those folks that are dealing with the PTSD. Musculoskeletal injuries are a very, very dangerous and important thing to address. We need to provide this critical care and have a chiropractor doing that locally. And I want to say this too. Keep in mind, you may not know the veteran that this legislation is helping, but I guarantee they're a mother, they're a father, they're a brother, they're a sister, they're a son, they're a daughter. They're every one of those folks that we know in our constituency, and they deserve us to be putting their issues at the forefront come this February. So here we are now, and let me tell you, this is one of many bills we'll be urging your support for. And on House Joint Memorial 201, I urge an aye vote today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Parrish, do you wish to close? She does.
Thank you all for listening to Representative from Eugene and Gresham out here who care about these issues, I think, as much as I do. So most of you know that December was my husband's last month in the military. This Friday is his formal retirement ceremony here in Salem, so I'll be skipping caucus for that. And, you know, he's 44 years old, and we have three kids that are 8, 10, and 12. And he coaches all their sports, and he's up at the mountain skiing with them, and he's out in our community. And you know what? The musculoskeletal stuff is keeping him from being a good dad to our kids. He wants to be there, but boy, those hips aren't working down the mountain like they used to. And so when you think about, you know, what happens after service, he's 44 years old. I'm hoping he's around for 40 more years. And to deal with this kind of chronic pain and suffering from 23 years in the military, that's a lot to bear. And so I'm really hopeful that we get to yes on this. I'm sure everyone's going to be a yes on this. It doesn't cost us anything. But, you know, I just think it's a travesty that I sit in committees where it is, those committees are filled with people with their hand out asking for money and asking for services. And we get to Veterans Affairs and there's hardly anybody there. Our veterans aren't coming to us asking for things. And I think it's important that if they're not going to come ask on their own behalf, that we need to be good advocates for them and get to yes on things. When Mark came home from Iraq on a furlough, it was all that our chiropractor could do to get him in and see him four times. But we had to pay cash for that. There was no coverage for that because he walked off that plane for a two-week visit and, you know, could barely move. So I'm hopeful that as we look at the other bills that are coming forward from Veterans Affairs, that we remember that, you know, a little bit of allocation to keep some of these things open and going is great. This one doesn't cost us a dime, so let's get to yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Those who are of the opinion that the memorial should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Conger, how do you vote? Aye. Conger votes aye. House Joint Memorial 201, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. The clerk will read the next memorial.
HJM 202, urging President and Congress to support full funding of United States Coast Guard's operational readiness and recapitalization requirements.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of HJM 202. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I didn't memorize mine either, but I only bring bills and memorials before you that I would like to have passed unanimously, so if you can repeat that last action, I'd be most grateful. This bill, or this memorial, comes to you from my request as a committee bill, also at the request of the Pacific Fisheries Legislative Task Force. And there are five states in this task force: Oregon, Washington, Alaska, Idaho, and California. And we are all bringing similar memorials to our Congress, or to send to Congress and the President, to ask them for full funding for the Coast Guard. We all have friends and family in the Coast Guard, or we utilize them, whether you know it or not, when you go fishing in the ocean, or if you go climbing in the mountains or whatever. Your U.S. Coast Guard is there to save you, rescue you if that's necessary, and they do a great job. In the case of the Coast Guard up in Alaska, they have been doing with less and asked to be doing more, in that the Arctic is opening up for a lot of different reasons, which we won't go into today, but they are being asked to cover more territory and more services with less equipment, and the distances, as you all know, in Alaska are very, very far. And I actually am cutting out part of my speech so that one of my colleagues can fill in with some anecdotal material, but I just wanted to let you know the importance of the sufficient funding for this service. And if one of my colleagues on the committee asked me the Latin verbiage on one of the things that you read, if you look at this whole memorial, I am fully semper paratus. So I urge your adoption of this memorial, and save yourself, save your friends, and save the U.S. Coast Guard. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? And colleagues, once again, I'd ask for your attention to our presenters. Further discussion? Representative Doherty.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think, as many of you know, my father was in the Coast Guard for 30 years and retired as captain of the port here in Portland, and was in charge of the Coast Guard in Oregon. The Coast Guard is one of the few services that there was actual presence all up and down the Oregon coast and also on our rivers and streams. So I urge that we pass the Joint Memorial 202. The Coast Guard was founded in 1790 by Alexander Hamilton, and it was initially referred to as the Revenue Cutter Service. It is the only armed service of the five that is under Homeland Security. It used to be under the Department of Treasury. What their goal is they safeguard our marine interests and environment all around the world. In fact, there has been Coast Guard presence in every war, including Iraq, where they did river patrols in Iraq. There are only 42,000 active Coast Guardsmen in the United States. That is less people than the New York City Police Department. In one day, this is what they do. Every day, the Coast Guard saves 12 lives. They respond to 64 search and rescue cases. They screen over 700 commercial vessels. They investigate 13 marine accidents and perform 28 safety and environmental examinations of foreign vessels. And they also go through and look at cargo, and they board ships, and they stop about 825 pounds of cocaine to get on the streets every day. They were also the first when we had the Gulf crisis, the Gulf Coast crisis, and they are in charge of all of the cleanup. The motto of the Coast Guard is Semper Paratus, always prepared, but as my father always said, it was always simply forgot us, because they were always the last in the armed services budget. So I urge you to send a very, very strong message to our congressional delegation to fully fund the U.S. Coast Guard.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Boone, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the memorial should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Representative Richardson. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Richardson is excused. Business of the House. HJM 202, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ask that the rules be suspended and Representative Schaffler be able to change his vote on House Bill 4034.
Representative Cameron moves the rules be suspended and that Representative Schaffler be allowed to change his vote on House Bill 4034. It will not change the outcome. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I use the automatic voting machine on the side aisle, and it's the first time this session, and I hit the wrong one. I vote aye.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Schaffler votes aye. Further announcements? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Republicans will caucus at 12:15. Grab your lunch, and we'll see you in 5 minutes.
Thank you. Further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This weekend they had a nice article on some bills that are, some of them are really job-creating bills, other than they call them job-creation bills. I support the Oregon Investment Act bill. I haven't got anybody tell me how many jobs are going to be. The stimulus spending bill, that's going to dry up. Tax incentives, you don't know what we're going to get out of it, although I'll support them if they get here. Allowing the local governments to keep more of their money, that's just rearranging the deck chairs, but I'd support that one too. I'm on several of these. Let me see, House Bill 4142, purchasing preference. It's a regulation. Let me see, re-examine government rules and impediments. Now that I vote for, but I don't see any jobs. It's government and regulation. Ensuring fair treatment. I don't know why anybody wouldn't interview somebody who doesn't have a job when they responded to a help wanted ad. And then at the end, finally, leveraging natural resources. House Bill 4098, logging on state lands. House Bill 4101, Columbia River water. And then we heard a really good bill that would allow for some flexibility in regional land use decisions. Those are the bills that should have been here first, Mr. Speaker, and they're not. We are, in my humble opinion, we are not doing what we were sent here to do, and that is to get people back to work so we can pay for all this stuff, including education reform and health care reform. If we don't do something substantial, not this, something substantial, we are going to fail the people of this state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative. Further remonstrance, Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I want to talk today about the foreclosure crisis that continues to wreak havoc on middle-class households all across our state and the chance we have this February to do something to help them. You have on your desks an editorial from the Oregonian calling for this legislature to take action on foreclosures this month. The Oregonian joins all of our state's major papers, including in Portland, Medford, and Salem, in calling for this legislature to take action on behalf of middle-class families. We all know the statistics. 1 in 4 homeowners underwater in their mortgages. Nearly 40,000 Oregon homes in foreclosure or delinquency. $9.2 billion, that's billion with a B, worth of lost property values due to nearby homes in foreclosure. And the depressing list goes on. We also all know that this problem has been around for nearly 4 years, and in that time it has only gotten worse. We need to address it, and we need to address it now. There are several bills that were introduced and deliberated in the 2011 session. The Senate passed one of them and sent it to our chamber, where it died without a hearing. Many of us were ready to pass these bills at that time. We did not get a chance. So as the deadline for hearings approaches this afternoon, I have to ask, why is it that the package of bills crafted to give some assistance to Oregonians struggling to stay in their homes, why is it not yet scheduled for a hearing? Now, one would think this would be one of the first things we would pass on the floor this session, but as of this morning, not a single foreclosure bill has been scheduled for a hearing in this chamber. The bills introduced this session are straightforward. Some enact much-needed protections to help middle-class Oregon families stay in their homes. My good neighbor bill, HB 4138, would require banks to maintain foreclosed properties so they don't become neighborhood blights and hazards, bringing down not only the surrounding property values but also the quality of the neighborhood life. All of this is common sense, and if we could get a hearing on these bills, I'm sure this body could come to agree that these are exactly the kind of steps we need to take to help middle-class families weather the economic downturn and keep their homes, their most important assets. But as we approach this deadline, we find this important topic being left behind. So I have to ask, whose side are we on? Do we stand and fight for the middle-class families who are working hard to hold things together until the economy turns a corner? Or, frankly, do we side with the Wall Street banks? Do we side with Bank of America, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase? Colleagues, I stand with those middle-class families that depend on us to come through with some common-sense protections this session before it's too late. That's who I stand with. And I invite you to join me. Let's work together to get HB 4138, HB 4137, and HB 4140 scheduled for a hearing today, and then pass them. Let's stand up for the people who sent us here. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further remonstrance? Seeing none. Adjournment. Representative Tome, 11 a.m. Tuesday, February 7th, 2012.
Mr. Speaker, I move that we adjourn until 11 a.m. Tuesday, February 7th.
Representative Tome moves the House adjourn until 11 a.m. Tuesday, February 7th, 2012. Without objection, the House is adjourned.